So we're on Daf Lamed Omid Beis, and you'll see a Tosfos on the side, Lo Nechshedu, and we're up to a line in the Gemara that's between that Tosfos, Lo Nechshedu, and the next Tosfos, which is Ella. And we're going to take a look at the words. You'll see the first word in the line is Shvus, and then it goes Kiman Azla. That's where we got up to. So let's just review what we need to know for this Gemara that we're about to learn, and that's the Shita of Sumchus with regard to Erev Tchumen. Sumchus made a distinction between Yayin L'Nazir, which is Mutter, as an Erev Tafshilin, as an Erev Tchumen, excuse me, as opposed to Truma L'Zar. In the case of Yayin L'Nazir, so the Nazir could drink the wine, in theory, if he would be Shoel al Nizirusa. And we said that if it's Litzorach Shabbos, then he's allowed to be Shoel on Shabbos l'Nizirusa. But in the case of Truma, we're not going to allow the Zar to be Shoel on his Truma. And that's because of the principle that, Rebbe's principle, that if you have a Shvus, then the Shvus applies during Bein HaShemoshes as well. So Bein HaShemoshes going into Shabbos, we have an Isur Shvus that prohibits you from being Mafrish, or in this case being Shoel, and then being Mafrish afterwards, right? Let's just go over one more point. Again, I don't want to spend the whole time on this because we spent a lot of time on this yesterday. If he's Shoel on his Truma, that's not enough to allow him to eat the Truma, because it reverts back to its state of Tevel. He would have to do two things. He'd have to be Shoel on his Truma, and then he would have to be Mafresh his Truma. And Hafrasha on Shabbos is prohibited Midrabanan as a Shvus, and that's the sugi at the end of Beitza, because we don't make Tikkunim and we don't fix up things on Shabbos. And to be Mafresh Trumah and take Tevel and make it into Chulin, that's considered a Tikkun, that's Os Mishum Shvus. And then, when the Erev Tafshilin should kick in, and it's going to be activated at that Bein HaShemoshos, because that's where I'm Kona Shvisa, according to Sumchus, I need food that is accessible to me. Not, I don't mean physically accessible in this case. What I mean is it's halachically accessible, and I can eat it as Muslim Shtei Sudos. There's no way, no how, that I would be able to eat this truma that I set aside as an Eruv. Why? Because even if I were to be Shoel on my truma, I would not be allowed to be Mafresh truma. Hence, the food would go from the status of truma to the status of Tevel. And Tevel is Asur, and therefore, it's not Roy le'Eruv. Now, this is the fundamental premise or shita of Sumchus, that an Erev has to be edible to the person who puts down the Erev. So that even though you might argue, well, Truma, what's the problem with Truma? A Kohen could eat the Truma, but I'm not a Kohen. And Sumchus says, if I'm not a Kohen, it's not Roy for me for Achil, it's not called Mazon Shtei Sudos, hence it's disqualified as an Erev. Now we're going to go on to learn another halacha. And we're going to try to see, based on a Mishnah in Kalim, if that Mishnah reflects the Shita of Sumchus. Kiman Azla Hodisnan. Which Shita of Eruv is reflected in a Mishnah in Kalim? Now, I have to be honest with you, whenever the Gemara quotes Kalim, I get nervous. You know, this is like way beyond. You know, it's not even in the Daf Yom, because Kalim is not included in Daf Yom. But this particular mission in Kalim, I'm very excited about. You know, I feel very comfortable about this mission in Kalim. The mission in Kalim raises the following question, and it applies in so many, so many different areas. Whenever the Torah sets up a shiur, is that shiur objective or subjective? Let's go through and see how this question fleshes itself out. The Mishnah says, Yesh sha'amru hakol lefishu adam. There are certain midos that are subjective, and it depends on the individual. And then, after listing those, the Mishnah is going to go on to list other midos that are objective. That's, it's not lefi ha'adam. So let's go through a couple of cases of midos that are hakol lefi ha'adam. The first one on the list is kmitza. Kmitza is the main avoda in Menachos, just like in Zvachim we have Zrikas Hadam, in Menachos we have kmitza. And in kmitza, he has to take a fistful of the soles, and he has to let it fall. Well, your fistful is not the same size as my fistful, and certainly not the size of Og Melech HaBoshen's fistful. Is the shear of kmitza relative or objective? And the answer is hakol lefi mashu adam melo komto shel hakohen hakometz es hamincha. And it all depends upon the individual kohen. What's considered for him melo komto, relative to the size of his hand. And this is derived from a pasuk at the beginning of Sefer Vayikra. The Torah says, "V'kamatz misham melo kumtzo," in the possessive, kumtzo. And that's called kol kohen lefi kumtzo. Every kohen, according to his kometz, lefi godel yado. And this is the Mishnah in Mesechta Menachos. What we don't know is the Yushalmi in Menachos. The Yushalmi in Menachos adds another element into the equation, in which the shear of Kmitza is a combination of both objective and subjective. Meaning that there's a minimum shear of Kmitza, which is called Kishnei Zaysim, less than which it doesn't qualify as Kmitza. And it doesn't matter who you are, and whether you're coming with a big hand or a small hand, ein kometz pachos mishnei zeisen. The Rambam actually codifies the halacha like this, Yushalmi, and therefore the Mishnah itself, when it talks about hakol lefi mashu adam, is above shnei zeisen. So if you have a small hand and you're a kohen and you're doing kmitza, then shnei zeisen of kmitza would be enough. But if you have a larger hand, then melo kumtzo would require going beyond shnei zeisim. But you could be a kohen who's as a hand that's a midget size, and yet he's going to be cholzot, being required this minimum shear of shnei zeisim. And that's the Rambam based on the Yerushalmi. I'll just mention in passing the Mishnah Lamelech, one of the super commentaries in the Achronim on the Rambam. And he writes the following. He says that a Kohen, according to this Yerushalmi, this is the basis of introducing the question of the Mishnah Lamelech, a Kohen whose Kaf HaYad could not hold two Zaysim is Pasul Yavoda. Now, I'm not sure the Mishnah Lamelech derives this from the same Yerushalmi. I'm not sure if the Yerushalmi means he's possible for all Avodas. I doubt it. He's probably possible just for the Avoda of Kmitza and Menachos. But either way, the Mishnah Lamelech's question is that the Rambam brings the Yerushalmi, but he omits the Yerushalmi, meaning he only brings part of the Yerushalmi. So the Rambam codifies the halacha that the minimum for the Maisa Kmitza has to be two zeisim. But he doesn't point out the next part of the Yerushalmi, and that is that a kohen whose kaf hayad holds less than two zeisim is pasul yavoda. And the Mishnah Lamelech says the following, Tzorech lomar, Lefima Sheshaninu, since the Mishnah says, quote, Hakol Lefimashu Adam, Hainu Le'inyin Shi'urla Mala, meaning that a Kohen whose hand could hold more than two Zaysim is going to be required to do a Kmitza of more than two Zaysim, that's called a Shi'urla Mala. Avalamata Yeshlo Shir, but as far as the minimum is concerned, as we saw in the Yerushalmi, it's got to be a Kometz that has the minimum of Shnei Zaysim. And therefore, he says that Lamata Yeshlo Shir, Hainu Shakometz Tzorch Lios Lechol Apochos Shnei Zaysim. In other words, the Rambam does not feel compelled to quote this halacha of psul avoda because I don't need the psul in the Kohen in the case that his kaf is so small. It's anyway a psul in the Maisik Mitzah. And in order to appreciate the proof of the Mishnah Melech, I suggest that we learn the balance of this Mishnah in Kalim, because he's going to build his case on the balance of this Mishnah. Well, let me just make myself a little dot over here that where we got up to in the Mishnah note. Okay. Now we have the case of Haktoras of the Kohen Gadol on Yom HaKippur. So we're shifting now from Masechta, we shifted from Erevin to Menachos, now we're shifting to Masechta Yom. And there's a requirement in Ketores called Melo Chafnov. And once again, he has to dig his hands into the Machta. The Machta is the kli that holds on to the Ketores as he digs in to the Mizbeach HaPnimi. And he has to, again, how he does this is a miracle, but he's got to hold on to the machta. Maybe he holds it in his mouth or so, anyway. And he digs his two hands into the machta to pick up the ketores. That's called Milo Chafnov. My Rebbe Rav Salvech has a lot of Torah on Milo Chafnov. Anyway, so now, how much is Melo Chafnov? So the Mishnah in Kalim that we're learning establishes that Melo Chafnov for the Haktoras on Yom Kippur, which is again, Lifnai V'Lifnim in the Kodesh Kadoshim, is relative to the size of the Kohen Gadol. And that means Kol Kohen Gadol Mimale Melo Chafnov Shelo. And there's no objective midah for Melo Chafnov that's going to apply to every single Kohen. Now we get to the Iser of the Nisem Es Nafshel Seichem. Now that is an Iser Kares, right, called Nefesh Shelo Teuna V'Nichrusa, which means that if you did it B'Shogeg, you're Chayv HaChatos. And the question is, let's talk about Shasiyah, we can talk about Achila as well. How much Shasiyah would qualify and constitute a violation of Ve'inisa? What might be what's called Yisuve Daiti for you is not Yisuve Daiti for me. So you might need a larger shear of Shasiyah of drinking in order to undermine the state of Inui, of affliction, we'll call it. But for me, I have a smaller mouth, I'm a smaller guy, so I don't need that much yayin, that much of a drink of whatever liquid it might be, mayim, whatever, in order to undermine my state of inui. And you and I would have said, if not for this Mishnah in Kalim, that there's got to be some sort of objective shear of shasiya that would generate a chiv chatos if he drank that shear on Yom Kippur. But to our surprise, but to our surprise, the Mishnah says not like that. And there's going to be a relative shiur, and that's called Mole Lugmov. Now, Mole Lugmov, which means that he fills up his cheeks with a liquid, that's relative to the size of the person. And the reason why there's no shiur kavua is because the Torah says v'nisev, and the amount of liquid, the volume of liquid that would undermine v'nisev is really relative. It depends upon each individual. And the Gemara at the end of Masechta Yoma says that Mole Lugmav equals Shnei Lechayayim Maleim Uboltim. Right? In other words, if you translate the Gemara, the Mishnah in this case, literally, Mole Lugmav would mean that he's got so much in his cheeks that his cheeks bulge out. The Gemara says, no, don't translate this literally. He would violate for a mashke bepiv if litzad echad, if on one side of his cheek it's mole ubolet. So don't take it literally lichayayim, meaning both cheeks, but rather one cheek is sufficient once it's bulging out to be considered a violation of Shisiya and Achiv Chatas on Yom Kippur. Okay. Now, in the note here, he summarizes a Gemara in Yuma, and he says the following. Mekubal bidei chachamim, she'ein daito shel odem is yasheves, that's called Yisuvei Daite, Ela kisheshosa moli lugmav shelo, his own moli lugmav. Now, the Gemara in Yoma wants to know, why does the Mishnah in Kelim only relate to address the issue of liquids, of shesia? What about achila? So the Gemara says, le'inyan achila, hashir hu kikoseves agasa lekulon. It's a standard uniform shita, shiur, for everyone, which is called kikoseves agasa, some sort of a date. The afilu imu og melech haboshan. Now, tzorich iyun, I mean, if I stop in the middle of a sentence, this makes no sense. You know, we're talking about yisuvei daite, we're saying that with regard to liquids and shesia, it's relative. What's mole lugma for you is not mole lugma for me. But with regard to achila, there's a kosefes hagasa, that's standard unified for everyone. What happened to this concept of inui nefesh? I mean, why is kosefes hagasa enough to generate a chiyuv chatas on Yom Kippur for og melech habosha? He says, shemakubo bidei chachamim, again, you could Google it and then argue, but the chachamim say, shekol adam daito misyasheves bishir shel kosefes hagasa. Even if I'm the giant of giants, you know, Gulliver's Travels, I'm og melech habosha himself, I have a yeshuvei daite because I ate kikoseves hagasa. V'daito shel odom misyasheves b'shir zeh. Ela shel odom gadol, daito misyasheves k'tzas ma'at yoser b'shir zeh. His yeshuv hadas is not the same as someone who's a smaller guy. He's only a size 40, he's not a size 120, you know, so but he does, even if he's og melech haboshan, he does get some minimum yeshuv hadas. So I don't know, we have a doctor here, I don't know if maybe I have to ask a nutritionist, I don't know who specializes in this area of yeshuv hadas and could differentiate between food that's solid and liquids, but this is what the Gemara says in Yoma, and go fight City Hall. I can't defend or reject the Gemara. So when it comes to liquids, it's very subjective, and based on your size, you will have a relative yeshuv hadas in liquids. That's called Mole Lugmav Shelo. But in the case of food, It's one standard shear for all, one size fits all, and that's called Kikoseva Sagasa. Everyone, even Og Melech Boshe, will get some element of Yeshiva Das with a Koseva Sagas. Now we get to the last punchline for us of this Mishnah. Ubimazon Shtei Sudos Li'erev. That as far as an Erev Tchumen is concerned, this has nothing to do with other kinds of Erevin, like Chatzeros and so forth. There is a relative shear. It's Hakol Lefi Mashu Adam. So what would satisfy you for a Suda, and multiply that by two, five for two Sudas, would not necessarily satisfy me, and vice versa. There's no uniform shear. And the Gemara is going to identify that with Sumchus. Now, how is this Sumchus? Because Sumchus said that it's got to be roi for me. You know, the fact that the Truma is roi for the Kohen, that's not going to validate my Eruv when I'm a Zar. And if that be the case, then let's say you have a person who cannot eat too much, and they get very full on a small amount. We're going to talk about a chol and a zaken. For them, I can validate an Eruv according to Sumchus, even if it's a very small, quote-unquote, mazon shtei sudos. Because for him, the chol or the zaken, that is mazon shtei sudos. Kiman, Om Rabbi Zera, Sumchus iti Omar, my dechazile bi'inon, we need for an Eruv the amount of food that's roi, that's fitting to be considered shtei sudos for that person. And therefore we don't have an objective shear of shtei sudos, because it all depends upon who's putting down the Eruv. He needs shtei sudos li'atzmo, again the old li'atzmo business. And the Chachamim, who say that Eruv means that somewhere on the face of the map it's Roy, like for example, the Truma is Roy for the Kohen, and therefore the Eruv is valid. Then if you have food, let's say for example, I'm Og Melech HaBoshe, and I'm going to eat, my Suda is, you know, is the entire banquet hall. You know, all the food you can put in one banquet hall is one Suda for good old O, right? So now, according to Chachamim, if let's say there's enough food for an Adam Beinoni, the Eruv of Og Melech HaBoshan is valid for him, according to the Chachamim, because it is enough food for Shtei Sudos for Yenim, for an Adam Beinon. Just like you validate an Eruv of Truma because it is Mazon Shtei Sudos for a Kohen, for Yenim, even though I'm not a Kohen, so too, the Eruv Tchumen, of Og Melech HaBoshan, of an Adam Beinon's worth of Shtei Sudos is valid. But according to Sumchus would say, is it royal shtei sudas for you? Because it's your Erev Tchumen. And if you're Og Melech HaBoshan, then Ke'odim Beinoni would not be sufficient. So the Gemara wants to say, Lema Pligi Adarabi Shimon Ben Elazar. In other words, we know now that Sumchus and the Chachamim would debate the issue of an Eruv with Shtei Sudos L'Adam Beinoni on behalf of Og Melech HaBoshan. Can we extrapolate from another Tana, who's addressing a slightly different issue, and place him into this, what's the word I want to use, this sports field, what do I call it, you know, where there's a debate here between Sumchus and the Chacham. Lema Pliga In other words, this Mishnah that establishes that the Shir of Shtei Sudos for Erev Tchumen is Hakol Lefi Mashu Adam is against Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. This Sanya we learned in a Braisa, Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, Mi Arvim Lechole Ulezokein Kidei Mizono. Oh, now the plot goes thicker. Do you remember when we first started this perek? When was it? 2 weeks ago? A month? Can't remember. I gave a little introduction, and I pointed out that in Erev Tchumen we always go Lekula. And now we are confronting, I think, it may be our first encounter with this principle, because what's going to happen is the following, that in the case of Og Melech HaBashan, we're going to apply the Kula in one direction, and in the case of Chol and Zaken, we're going to apply the Kula in another direction. What I mean is the following, that we're going to validate, let's talk about Og Melech HaBash, validate an Eruv based on Adam Beinoni for an Og, and we're going to allow for a more limited volume of Mazon Shtei Sudos and validate that as an Eruv. Now, let's apply the Adam Beinoni as a Chumrah and be Mekil in Erev Tchumen for the sake of a Chola and a Zaken. So that a Chola and a Zaken will eat Mazon Shtei Sudos of a smaller volume than an Adam Beinoni. Now, in the case of Og Melech, so if you have this, what should I call it? Not a hierarchy, I don't know what word to use, but if you have this pillar, you know, that goes up from, you know, one level to the other, then what's going to happen is that we're going to place Adam Beinoni, his Mazon Shtei Sudos, right in the middle. We're going to have Og on top, and we're going to have Chol and Zaken on the bottom. And we're always going to go down from higher to lower. That's called Lekula. So in the case of Og Melech HaBashan Shtei Mazon Shtei Sudos, we're going to go down to the level of an Adam Beinoni. In the case of a Chol and Zaken, we're going to go down a level to the level of Chol and Zaken, which is even less than Mazon Shtei Sudos of an Adam Beinoni. Now we have Og Melech HaBashan, and in the language of this Braisa, he's called a Ra'avtan, which I guess literally would be a very hungry person or a gluttonous person. You know, he's got a big stomach, you know, he eats a lot. I don't know if he's necessarily 7 feet tall, but, you know, he could be a shrimp, but he eats a lot. So if you ask him what would satiate him for Mazon Shtei Sudos, he would be like Og Melech HaBashan. But the Braisa says, Ula Ravtan, Bisuda Beinonis Shel Kol Adam. Let's go over the Braisa from the top. Rav Shimon Elazar Omer, Ma'arvim Lechole Ulezaken Kedei Mizono. In other words, we don't need a sheer gadol of, you know, for Mazon Shtei Sudos of Stam B'nei Adam of Adam Beinoni, because a chol and a zaken are mematim b'achila ule ravtan. So he eats, generally speaking, more than an Adam Beinoni. Is we could be ma'arvim b'shir seuda beinonis shel kol Adam. And that's called Pliga de Rabbi Shimon ben Eliezer Elazar. which means that the Mishnah is against Rav Shimon ben Elazar. Why is the Mishnah against Rav Shimon ben Elazar? The Mishnah says Mazon Shtei Sudos Li Erev means Hakol Lefi Mashu Adam. And if we go with Hakol Lefi Mashu Adam, then just like Sumcha says that Truma, although it's edible to a Kohen, is not edible to Yisrael, therefore it's invalid, so too the Mazon Shtei Sudos of an Adam Beinoni would just not, you know, it would not cut the mustard, so to speak, as far as the Rav Tan is concerned. And yet, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar in this Braisa validates an Eruv on behalf of a Rav Tan with the shear of an Adam Beinoni. If we're going to apply the principle of the Mishnah in Kalim and take it to its logical conclusion, the Mishnah in Kalim establishes that Erev Tchumen, like Kmitza and Moloch Afnayim and the shear of Inui in Shasias Mali Lugma of Yom Kippur, it really shifts. And it depends on the individual. So, for example, you have a Kohen who has larger hands, then his mole, his Moloch Afnayim or his Kmitzas Yad is going to be greater. We're going to require more of a Kmitza, a greater amount, a greater volume. And that means we're going with Chumra. You can't tell me, well, for Yenim, this would be mole Kumtza. No, for me, it's not mole Kumtza. Therefore, the Gemara deduces from this Mishnah in Kalim that in the case of a Rav Tan, his Erev would not be valid simply because for Yenim, for someone else who's an Adam Beinoni, that would be a sufficient volume of Mazon Shtei Sudos. And the Gemara thinks that since the Mishnah in Kalim took Erev Tchumen and placed it in the general universal rubric of Kol Mashu Adam, that goes L'chumra or L'kula. So if you want to use the case of a Cholo Zaken, so Enochinami, he's like the Kohen with a small hand, and we can be Mekel and validate the Eruv, even if it's not Mazon Shtei Sudos for an Adam Beinoni, but it's Mazon Shtei Sudos for a Cholo or a Zaken. But in a case of a Rav Tan, of our Og Melech HaBashan model, there we have to go L'chumra, just like we had to be Machmir for the Shear of Kmitza, if the Kohen is much larger. Or, in the case of Og Melech HaBashan, his Mole Lugmav is a greater volume. And therefore, for the Rav Tan, he should require a greater volume. So the Gemara deduces that this Rav Shimon ben Elazar argues with our Mishnah and accepts the principle of a standard, uniform shiur, meaning a midah for Mazon Shtei Sudos of an Erev Tchum. Hence, in the case of a Rav Tan, it's enough that you have Kishir Adam Beinoni. So Gemara says, no. Targuma, I thought it's Tirguma, but I think he has a pasuk. Targuma Achole V'Zaken. Let's interpret the Mishnah as referring to a Chole and a Zaken, which means that we're going to go L'Kula. And according to the Mishnah, Kol Mashu Adam, if he's a Chol and a Zaken, he can be satiated by Mazon Shtei Sudos of a smaller amount, and that's valid for his Erev Tavshilin and its relative. Aval, however, Rav Tan, you might say, well, if the Mishnah says it's got to be my Mida, and for the Rav Tan, his Mida is greater than that of an Adam Beinoni, and therefore the Mishnah logically would invalidate the Eruv of a size of an Adam Beinoni in the case of a Rav Tan. We're going to find an exception to this rule. We're going to apply a principle called Butler Daita Itzokolot. But before we get to that, just to get the structure of the Gemara, the Havamina of the Gemara was HaKol Mashalafia Adam is a sliding scale, and it goes in both directions. So for the case of a Chol and Zaken, it minimizes the requirement of an Erev Tchumin, but in the case of a Rav Tan, it should maximize the shear of Mazon Shtei Sudos for Erev Tchum. That was the Gemara's Havamin. And yet, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar in the Brisa says that Adam Beinoni, in the case of Rav Tan, Adam Beinoni is enough. It must be that this Brisa of Rabbi Shimon is against our Mishnah of Caleb. There's no way of reconciling it. Because it's a sliding scale. And it's got to go Lakula in the case of a Chol HaZaken, Lachumra in requiring a greater volume for the Erev Tchumen of a Ravta. So Mar now introduces a new element into the equation that's going to allow us to reconcile the Mishnah with the Braisa of Rav Shimon ben Elazar. And that is that in the case of Ravton, we apply the principle of Butla Daito Eitzel Kol Adam. Now, Rabosai, this requires a lot of iyun. I'm just going to tell you my humble opinion, just, how should I say, my knee-jerk response, you know, just on a superficial level. The halacha operates with categories, and it recognizes and validates categories. But there's a limit. You can't have one person creating a category. Let me go one step further. Again, when I say one person, don't take me literally. I mean, it could be, you have 20 people, but it's like one person. Why? Because it's abnormal behavior. It's like, I'll give you a mashal, like Ruba de Lesser Kamon, which means that we can't actually count the Rov, but it's built into nature. And although the Torah only recognizes, at least explicitly, Ruba de Issa Kamon, where we have a tangible Rov that we can count, you know, you've got 9 butcher shops that are selling this and one that, but the extension of Rov is Ruba de Lesser Kamon. That's based on nature. So, for example, the Gemara says, in Chulin, how do I know that this animal that I shechted is not a treifa? So Gemara says, well, we'll check the innards of the animal after the shechita. But what? Maybe there was a neck of a makom shechita, and that, you know, your checking is not going to help you. So Gemara says, we rely on Rov, that Rov animals are not treifos. Again, there may be exceptions to the rule. You know, that's, the whole business about geese. You know, they force feed the geese, and therefore, maybe most geese are treifas. I don't know. You know, you maybe have exceptions to the rule. You have cows that are eating nails, you know, so maybe we can't drink the milk of the cows, you know. Anyway, but that's called a Ruba de Lesser Kamon. Now, how do you know that this fellow is the son of so-and-so, that if he hits his father, he's chayav misa, you know. So the answer is Rov Bilas Achar Abal. That's a Ruba de Lesser Kamon. And it's built into something that's natural, whether it's psychological, whether it's biological. So, for example, the Gemara says about Metzia that the psychology is that if you lose something, Bezuto Shalyam, it falls to the bottom of the sea, and you start yelling and screaming, I'm not Messiah, I'm going to hire, you know, deep sea divers. So the Gemara says, butler daito etzel kol adam. That contravenes, you know, a certain psychological assumption about the nature of man. So chol and zaken are halachically valid categories. These are not, again, you know, the fact that a person is a zaken or a chol, I mean, that's in a sense, puts him into a minority category as far as biology is concerned, but it's a category. It's not some sort of fluke, you know, that this is going against nature. Now, we all get old, right? And we all get sick at certain points. And when you're sick, if you're a real chola and you go into bed, you have very little appetite. Then that's also built into nature. I wouldn't say butler daito etzel kol adam. He's yelling and screaming about something which is antithetical to the psychology of man or the biology of man. In fact, chola and zaken are categories which are recognized in the halacha, here, there, and elsewhere. In Korban Pesach, you'll have chola and zaken with special dinim. But the case of a glutton who comes along and says, you know, give me mazon shtei sudas for another benini, and I got an expanded stomach, that's already butler daito etzel kol adam. But that's already a new principle that forms an exception to the rule and allows us, according to Sumchus, whose shita is reflected in the Mishnah in Kalim, that there is no such thing as, well, it satiates him, or it's roi l'achila for him. No. It's got to be roi l'achila for you. And here, we had a problem, because why should the Ravtan have a valid Erev with an Adam Beinoni's Shtei Sudos? And the answer is Bot L'Daita El Sekolim. It's Anaya Halacha. You know, it's coming from left field. The Kash of the Gemara is much stronger than the Teretz of the Gemara, in that sense. You know, the Teretz of the Gemara has to introduce some sort of a super overarching halachic principle. In the absence of that principle, the logic is compelling with the Havamin of this Gemara, that Rav Shimon Elazar is at loggerheads with our Mishnah of Kalim, because our Mishnah of Kalim reflects the principle and the definition of Erev Tchumen according to Sumchus, in which we have to ask this person, is this really going to be your Shtei Sudos? And if it's not, then it's not a valid Erev. And for the Ravtan, this is not his Mazon Shtei Sudos. This Gemara reminds me by sheer association of what we discussed earlier today about Koseves Hagasa on Yom Kippur. You've got Og Melech HaBoshon, but there's a certain basic level of Ois Inui, which is called Yishev Adas, that even Og Melech HaBoshon will achieve that minimum of Yisuvei Daite with a Koseves Hagasa, as small as it is for his gigantic size. And therefore, he's going to be Chayav HaChatos when he eats Koseves Hagasa of a solid food on Yom HaKippur. So in liquids, we said that Yishuv Hadas is totally reflective of your size. But when it comes to Yishuv Hadas in solids, there is a grassroots bottom of Yishuv Hadas that's common and is universal. In the case of Erev Tchumen, the bottom base is considered Shtei Sudos for Adam Beinoni. We may be lenient and recognize the validity of less than Adam Beinoni in the case of a Chol and Zaken, because for them, that's Shtei Sudos, even though it's less than Shtei Sudos for you and I. But in the case of a Ravtan, that's already not a category. And therefore, we now fall back on the objective shear of Adam Beinoni. So just before we start the next sugya, in summary, I would say that the halacha of Shi'urim in Erev Tchumen, in the context of Sumchus and the Mishnah in Kalim, is a hybrid, complex concept. you and I would have thought before the Gemara's answer that it's a sliding scale going lechumra lekula, and I'll never know exactly what the shear is. There's no objective element. It's all relative. Comes along the Gemara and says, nein, there is a bottom barrel universal shear that could be lekula in the case where we leave mazon for an anabenini on behalf of a ravta. That is already the objective shear of ke'adam benini, and even Sumchus will recognize the validity of that basic shear, that objective element. Okay. Now, Rabosa, we go on to learn Masechta Olos. You know, it's not enough that we learned Masechta Kelim, and we learned Abyssal of Masechta Yuma. Now we have to learn Masechta Olos. That's why it's called Talmud Bavli. Bolo min hakol. So the Mishnah says that there's an entity in Hilchas Tumas Mes, which is called a Beis HaPras. So you have a field, and we know for sure that there was a corpse that was buried in the field, and then they plowed that field, and we're afraid that when they plowed the field, the plow came in contact with this corpse that was buried somewhere in the field, and it broke up the body, the corpse, which is now basically bones for our purposes, but an etzem kisaora, the size of a barley kernel, is enough to be metame betumas mes. And the Rabbanan therefore made a gzera that this field is sort of off limits for a kohen. It's like, I don't know, I haven't been in the Golan recently, but when I was a youngster, we went up to the Golan. Do you remember they had those signs there that there's a minefield still from the Syrians? Do they still have that today? I don't know. Anyway, so the Beis HaPras is off limits for a Kohen. Because the Rabbanan Rav Choshesh that wherever he steps in the Beis HaPras, he may come in contact with Etzem Kisaora. To our surprise, the Mishnah here in Masechta Erevin tells us that if the Mazon Shtei Sudos of a Kohen was placed in a Beis HaPras, the Erev is valid. And the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question. Why is that called Mazon Shtei Sudos? By virtue of its location of Beis HaPras, it's not accessible to the Kohen. So the Gemara says, the Amar of Yehuda, Amar Shmuel, Menapeach Odom Beis HaPras Vaholech, that a Kohen is indeed allowed to enter into a Beis HaPras under the following strict conditions. And that is that he bends down as he's walking and he blows away the ground to make sure that there's no etzem kisaora there. And we're not choshesh that maybe he will contract tumah, because when he blows in front of his feet, meaning before his feet walk, he will be able to determine that there's no etzem kisaora on the ground that he's about to step upon. Now, it may have been there was an etzem kisaora, but he blows it away. And once he blows it away, he's allowed to walk there. And this again indicates that something that we've said many, many times. We said it today, we said it yesterday, but many times before that, that Erev Tchumen is Mazon Shtei Sudos based on potential. In other words, whether Cohen actually does this or not is irrelevant to me. But the very fact that he has the ability to do so within the halachic world, and he can get access to the Mazon Shtei Sudos that's located in the Sod Beis HaPras, that's enough to validate the Eruv. Now, it's interesting. Once the Gemara talks about this Heter, which is going to allow a Kohen to enter into Beis HaPras, the Gemara jumps on the bandwagon and mentions another Heter for Sod Beis HaPras. It's not relevant to Masechta Erevin. The Rishonim here say that whenever they quote this first halacha, they always inevitably quote the second halacha, all of Ashas. Rabbi Yehuda bar Ami Mishmei de Rabbi Yudomar Beis HaPras Shenidosh Tohar, which means that Drisas Regel of Bnei Adam is also a substitute for Neficha, for being Menapech, and it's going to guarantee us that whatever pieces of bones might have been left in the Sada Beis HaPras have already been crushed, so that they're less than the shear of Etzem Kisaora, because that's called Nidosh. Nidosh means that people will trample on the ground and they'll break these small bones into smaller parts, and therefore it's not Metame. Now we go on, and our Mishnah quotes Rabbi Yehuda, and he goes even a step further. He's going to validate an Eruv on behalf of a Kohen when the Eruv is in a Beis HaKvaros. Rabosai, how, under what circumstances, can we allow a Kohen to go into a cemetery? So Tana the Braisa amplifies Rabbi Yehuda and says, "Mipnei sheyochol lachotz vilelech b'tok shida teva u'migdal." So this is real heavy olos, and this has to do with a davrach chotzeis b'fnei atuma, and it means that it has the qualifications of not being susceptible to tuma, and therefore serving as a partition to separate and limit or restrict the tuma. And that's called Shida Teva Umigdal. Now, it's almost as if he's flying through the airspace of the Beis HaKvaros in a flying chariot, and he never actually comes in contact with the kvarim, with the grave sites, the graves. And these three utensils are very, very large. They could hold arboim saw, and therefore they have the status of a chatzitza bifnei atum. And what this means is we have something called an Oel Zaruk, which is again one of those, you know, for those who learn Olos, I mean, that's like a major terminology, Oel Zaruk, which was an Oel that's in motion. Now, if we assume that an Oel Zaruk, despite the fact that it moves from one place to the other, is considered an ohel, then the Kohen sitting inside of this flying carriage, again we'll have to see exactly what that means, he is sitting in an ohel, and that ohel is not part of the Beis HaKvaros, it's a separate entity unto itself, and the Kohen remains Tahar, and the oil is chotzeitz bifnei atuma, and therefore he can enter into the Beis HaKvaros. Now exactly how he's going to pick up the Eruv that's located in the Beis HaKvaros while he's flying through the Shida Tevo Migdal, that we're going to have to see in the Gemara itself. So first of all, as we end the shir, I just want to give you translations of Shida Teva Umigdal. So I have here the English translation, and he says the following. One second, see if I can find this. Oh. He says that, okay, he says a coin could blow on the ground in front of him as he walks through the Beis HaPras. He'll uncover any bone fragments which were concealed by loose dirt. Any large piece of bone would immediately become visible. The small fragments would be revealed by his blowing. Fine. Now, as far as the cemetery is concerned, he says the Kohen can partition himself off. That's called lochutz, miloshon chatzitza. So he's got a chatzitza that partitions himself off from the tumah. Velelech b'shida teva u'migdal. So he enters into the cemetery in a carriage. Okay, that's called a shida, an enclosed carriage. And if I'm not mistaken, these carriages were used for women, for fancy ladies. Let me just see if by any chance in the Hebrew he mentions this. Just one second. Oh, shida, in the Hebrew, he writes argaz eitz. You know, argaz is more of a, like a closet. Not finding the word I need, but anyway. Hamechubra la gola. Ah, so he's inside. That's what it means, a carriage. So the shida itself is not the carriage. The shida is being carried by the carriage. The shida itself is a wooden enclosure. And the osli lemerkav noshim chashuvos. Okay, that's Rashi. Rashi elsewhere says it's also for men. Okay, so this is the Cinderella syndrome here. Then we have something called a teva, which is also made of wood. And what is a teva? So he says in the English, it's a crate. Okay, I prefer the Hebrew here. He says that a teva is a teva shel eitz, homedes lifnei ha-shulchani. So these are the money changers, and they used to put things inside a teva. So let's say you gave them money, they would put it in the teva, and then they would take out the money, you know, the smaller coins, and give you an exchange. And then he has a migdal, which he calls an aron shel eitz, and in the English he calls it a closet. So we've got a carriage, a crate, and a closet. Now, the human being is inside one of these enclosed utensils. Rebbe Metame, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda Metayer, B'maikam Miflugi, Marsover Oel Zorik Lavshme Oel. So Rebbe is Machmir, and he says it's Tomei because this is not called an Oel. It's a moving tent, is not called an Oel, and therefore it's not Chotzis B'fnei HaTum. Mar Sovar, however, Rabbi Yossi holds, Oel Zorik Shmei Oel, and as a result, if it's an Oel, then it's Chotzis B'fnei HaTum, and therefore he's Metayer. And he says in the note, he says that the Chachomim of the Mishnah concur with the Shita of Rebbe. Okay, that we'll have to see what that's all about, but he writes here, and with this we'll conclude, and that is that Oel Zark Shmei Oel, that's Quinter of Yossi, Vechotzeitz Bifnei Atuma, it's an Oel, Ubimachlokes Zu, Nechleku Tanakama of Rabbi Yehuda Bimishnasena. Rabbi Yehuda Savar Oel Zark Nechshavli Oel, Vareu Chotzeitz Bifnei Atuma, Velochen Efshalaniach Eruvo Shal Kohen Bibes Hakvaros. And what's the theoretical possibility that the Kohen will get access to his Eruv in a Beis HaKvaros? She yochal HaKohen lagia elov, he can access the food. Ayidei she yikonis l'sham b'teva gdola me'etz, this very large wooden carriage or crate. And somehow he grabs hold of the Eruv. Again, that part we'll have to get to in the Gemara, but Tanakama Sovar, the Tanakama who disqualifies the Eruv on behalf of Kohen if the Mazon is in a cemetery, Sovar, Oel Zorok Eino Nechshavli Oel, And it's not chotzis b'fnei atumah because it's a movable oil, and therefore eino eruv shari eino yochel agia el eruvo. It's impossible, according to the halacha, in the shita of the Tanakhama, which is also the shita of Rebbe, to get access to his eruv, because the kohen is enjoined from being metame himself. And once he enters the Beis HaKvaros, even if he enters inside a carriage, he is makabel. He's makabel tum, and that he's not allowed to do. There's no way, no how, that he can get access to this eruv, and therefore the eruv is possible. Rav Yossi holds that all zarek shmei oil, and therefore it's chotzes b'fnei atuma, and therefore the kohen theoretically could enter into the Beis HaKvaros in a shida teva migdal. He will have access to his eruv, and therefore the eruv is valid. So let's just make a note that tomorrow Mitzvah Shem will learn Daf Lamed Aleph Amid Aleph. Let's just mention that the Gemara is going to quote a machlok shin Rav Yudin Rabban about Ma'arvim L'Koin B'Truma Tahora B'Kever. And the Gemara is going to explain the reasoning for that machlokas in the light of everything that we've been discussing until this point. And the Gemara says, V'Hadisanya, the Marshal has a different girsa here. He takes out the word V'ha, he just has the word Tanya. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, on the top of Daf Lamed Aleph, Ma'arvim Lekoin Tohar B'Truma Tahora B'Kever. So you can set up an Eruv on top of a Kever with Truma Tahora. Again, how the Truma remains Tahora, we don't know yet, but it's Ma'arvin Lekoin Tohar. Again, a Kohen Tomei is not allowed to eat Truma, so there'd be no way that a Kohen Tomei could have this Eruv, a valid Eruv with Truma. But if he's a Kohen Tohar, he's allowed to eat, and he's even obligated to eat Truma Tahora. And the Gemara asks, Hechi Ozil, how is it possible for the Kohen to get access to his Eruv that's sitting on a Kever? And the answer is, Beshida Teva U'Migdal. So you're going to say the only way he could go into the Beis HaKvaros is in one of these enclosed carriages, if we're holding old Zarek Shmei Oel. So Gemara asks the question, Keva di Achta Itamyola. In other words, what happens to this Truma as soon as you put it down on a Kever? It contracts Tuma. So therefore the Truma is Truma Tmeya. So even if I would grant you that you could set up an Eruv in a Beis HaKvaros, and it's accessible to the Kohen who comes into the Beis HaKvaros, Teva Shido Me'u Migdal, and certainly you can get access to the Truma, which is on an individual Kever, but we still have to ask the question, how is it possible that the Truma is Re'uyele Erev, it immediately contracts Tuma from the Kever, and Truma Tmeya is Asur Bachila even for a Kohen? So here's the paradox in this price. if the Truma, you can consider it accessible to the Kohen, even if the Kohen is not inside a let's say you have a Kever that's on the outer boundary of the cemetery, the Kohen could just grab onto the Truma Tmeya by stretching out his arm, even if he's not in a Shida Teva Migdal. You know, Shida Teva Migdal means if he has to enter into the Beis HaKvaros. But here's a case where the Truma was placed on top of a Kever, Kever Yechidi, and the Kohen has access to that Truma without having to enter into the Beis HaKvaros. Therefore, he doesn't need a Shida Teva or a Migdal. But the big paradox here is, how can you have Truma Tahora that's sitting on top of a Kever? And the Gemara is going to answer, but Truma Shlo Hukshira, you know, there was no contact with one of the seven Makshir and seven liquids. Oh, alternatively, the bread that he put there was Irva, Irev, Pas Sheni Losha B'Mei Peros. And a Pas Sheni Losha B'Mei Peros is not Mukshal Kabal Tuma. And therefore, the truma remains truma tahora, and it's re'uya l'kohen be'achila. The kohen doesn't have to go into the Beis HaKfaris, as we said. He could just simply stretch his arm out, lift up the truma tahora, and he can eat it, and therefore we can have an eruv with truma tahora that's sitting on top of a kevah. Okay, then, so this is where we'll stop here on the top of Daf Lamed Aleph, Omed Aleph. And we're up to the Gemara's Kash of Hechi Maisei La, which is on the fourth line down from the top of Lamed Aleph, Omed Aleph.